From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Yes, it's another edition of Current Sports. We are live here on your radio on this Tuesday, December 9th. As always, we got a hot show in store for you. We got a special Top 5 Tuesday, folks. Each and every Tuesday, we love to list a Top 5 sporting topic. And since Michigan State will be playing its final game of the season on New Year's Day against Baylor in the Cotton Bowl, we decided to take a look at the season that was, up until this point, of course, for the MSU football year, and bring you our top five highlights of the 2014 MSU football season. You do not want to miss that. That's right around the corner. We'll also talk about the Heisman Trophy finalists, the final list. There's only three that were released yesterday. We'll discuss and debate if we agree with them or not. Also, we'll give you grades on the MSU men's and women's basketball team so far in the season. And also, we invite Brooks Lambeer for the last time as he will break down the MSU men's soccer game on Saturday as they fell to Providence in the Elite Eight. Yeah, we put a bow on the season that was for MSU men's soccer. But before we get to all of that action and so much more, let's start the show like we always do. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this December 9th. All right, folks, time for your current sports quick hit headliners, and let's start with the boys' high school basketball season. Yes, the boys' basketball season fully gets going in mid-Michigan today with a full slate of games. Now, some of the more notable games are Lansing Catholic and Okemos, East Lansing and DeWitt, Waverly versus Holt, and a game that I'll be at tonight doing play-by-play for 92.1 Big Country FM with Eric Doc Love. I'll be at the Ovid, Elsie, and Fowler game. Tune in, folks. You'll hear me calling that one. Exciting stuff, so go on and watch some hoops tonight. I can't believe the boys' basketball year is already here, folks. All right, Liz Nagel, the DeWitt graduate and former Michigan State golfer, has earned partial status on the LPGA Tour for 2015 after finishing tied for 35th in the final stage of qualifying school this weekend in Daytona Beach, Florida. Now, Nagel carded an even par 360 during the five-round final stage of the LPGA qualifying tournament to earn priority list Category 17 status. Now, through that, Nagel hopes to play in 12 to 15 LPGA Tour events next year. So congrats to Liz. That's exciting stuff right there. All right. The Michigan Athletic Department spokesman confirmed to MLive on Monday that a report from the Chicago Tribune shows that Michigan will play Penn State in a basketball and hockey doubleheader at Madison Square Garden during the year 2016. Now, the games will formally be announced Tuesday during a Big Ten press conference in New York City that will be headlined by the league's decision to move the men's basketball tournament to Madison Square Garden in 2018. Now, Big Ten Commissioner Jim Delaney told the Tribune's Teddy Greenstein, over the weekend that the Michigan and Penn State doubleheader will be held on January 30th of 2016 as part of, quote, Big Ten Day. So that's something to certainly look forward to. All right, the Heisman Trophy finalists have been announced. In Oregon quarterback Marcus Mariota, Alabama receiver Amari Cooper, and record-breaking Wisconsin running back Melvin Gordon are set to make the trip to New York for the Heisman presentation after finalists were announced yesterday. Now, Mariota is considered to be the clear front runner to win the 80th Heisman on Saturday night in New York. He will become the first Oregon player to earn college football's most famous player of the year trophy. Now, the last time voters picked only three Heisman finalists was back in 2012, so not too far from now, where Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, won in a landslide vote against Kansas State's Colin Klein and Notre Dame's Manti Te'o. And further news concerning Johnny Football in just a sec, we'll get to that in about 30 seconds, or a little bit more than that. Detroit Lions plan to re-sign Kellen Davis today. They helped to just really work on that beleaguered tight end corpse. Now, Joseph Fourier aggravated a left ankle injury that has troubled him most of the year in Sunday's 34-17 win of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and could miss at least this weekend's home finale against the Minnesota Vikings. Now, Davis, a Michigan State product, did not catch a pass during his time with the Lions. He was released after a Week 12 loss to the New England Patriots. So you can expect him back in the Lions uniform very, very soon. All right, the Detroit Pistons have lost 12 in a row for the first time since a 13-game skid from December 15, 2009 to January 12, 2010. Their last win was a 96-89 overtime victory in OKC on November 14th to snack a 10-game losing streak to the Thunder, who were without Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. Now, the Pistons will try to stop the bleeding tonight at 7:30 as they take on the Portland Trailblazers. All right, now to further news concerning Johnny Football. Johnny Manziel is expected to start at quarterback for the Browns on Sunday against the Bengals. Now, Brian Hoyer has started all 13 games for the Browns this season after beating Manziel in training camp to win the job. Now, the Browns have lost three of their last four games, though, through a stretch in which Hoyer has just one touchdown and eight INTs. Now, Manziel appeared in Cleveland's loss to the Bills in Week 13. He completed 5 of 8 pass attempts for 63 yards. And sad news from the NFL here. Chief safety Eric Berry has been diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease and will begin chemotherapy for what doctors call a very treatable and potentially curable form of cancer. Oh, boy, man, that's tough stuff right there. Definitely thoughts and prayers go out to Eric Berry. Again, diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, which is a form of cancer. Again, Berry had been undergoing tests at Emory University in Atlanta since an MRI exam nearly 2 weeks ago that showed a mass on the right side of his chest. Now, at the time, doctors were still uncertain whether the mass was cancerous, but further testing does reveal lymphoma. So we hope that he gets better. Hate hearing news about, you know, not even just in the sports world, but anybody who's battling cancer. It is one heinous disease that has no age limit, no race, just nothing. It has no boundaries, folks. It can affect anybody. So thoughts and prayers out to Eric Berry. Folks, our phone lines are open. They will stay open this entire hour here on Current Sports. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything that we talk about here on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. And I'll read your comments right here live on the show today. And speaking of just sad stories, Alex, I don't know if you saw this, but I was up late last night. Of course, I got NBA League Pass now, which I'm in complete heaven about. So I was sitting, I watched about three games last night. I watched, of course, the Cavaliers play the Brooklyn Nets. Pretty cool stuff because, you know, Prince William, the Prince and the Duchess was in the house watching LeBron James play. I don't know if you saw that, but that was pretty cool stuff. Jay-Z and Beyonce was also there. I tell you what, talk about breaking the internet. I mean, that picture alone, I mean, that's just, my goodness, that's a lot of moolah in one building right there. But that was pretty cool. LeBron James beat the, and his Cavaliers beat the Nets. But I also checked out a very good game that went to double overtime. It happened to be the Washington Wizards. As they took on the Boston Celtics. One incredible game goes to double overtime. John Wall is playing out of his mind this year. One of the best players in the league this year. He had quite the performance last night. Actually, without John Wall, let's be honest here, Washington would have lost that game last night. But he goes on a stretch where he scores 10 straight points in double OT and pushes the Wizards to a thrilling victory. Unbelievable game. But it was really interesting because, you know, during the postgame report, he goes over to the reporter, and the reporter's asking him about the game and whatnot. And John Wall immediately brings up a young girl by the name of Maya, who was 6 years old. Maya sadly passed away over the weekend due to cancer. She passed away, and John dedicated his performance last night to Maya. And I tell you what, if you haven't seen the video, I mean, it's everywhere, folks. And I knew it was going to go viral as soon as I watched it live. But it's all over ESPN, Yahoo Sports, SI's talking about it. It's unbelievable because right when he's asked about it, he talks about how he dedicated the performance to her, and he immediately can't hold back tears and just starts bawling. It just shows you, you know, this is one of those stories that go beyond the X's and O's and goes beyond sports. And, you know, it kind of reminded me, if you remember Adrian Payne and Lacey Holdsworth, that story that took place at MSU last year. Lacey Holdsworth, she was so close to the Michigan State men's basketball team, and she had passed away. And then there was a huge memorial that was done down at the Breslin Center in honor of Lacey and her battle with cancer. Dickie V hopped on board to start this whole campaign and use Lacey's name and her face and just overall image and her story to raise money to try and fight the disease of cancer. But it kind of reminded me of that story because there's so many young people out there and people in general that go through the battle that is cancer. And any time when athletes or any person of stature that is on that type of level to give back to try and research and trying to combat this heinous disease, and with it also being Jimmy V week in the world of college basketball, you're starting to hear about so many athletes and so many programs, coaches, and personnel donate to the cause. So I just found it just to be such an very intriguing story. So hey, and I always tell people, you know, tomorrow is never promised on this earth. You know, make sure you tell somebody that you love them. Tell your family and friends that as much as you can, folks, because life is so precious. Well, folks, again, we have a great show in store for you. Later on, we'll invite Brooks Lambeer for really the last time for this year. Michigan State soccer team, of course, they fell to Providence on Saturday. They had another chance at possibly cracking that Final Four in the NCAA tournament, but came just a bit short to Providence. What a game it was, though. What an atmosphere it was. Fans packed the stands for it. Unbelievable stuff. The official number for the fans that attended it, just in the student section, was listed to be over 200. How about that? But Brooks was in the house. I was in the house. You'll get to hear my report from DeMartin Stadium, and then that'll be a nice little segue into our conversation with Brooks on where now this MSU soccer team goes. And this is, you know, something that we know with MSU going back-to-back Elite Eight appearances now. Is this something that we can continue to expect year after year when it comes to this really unbelievable powerhouse that Damon Rensing is building? So, you know, you want to stick around for that. We'll also talk about the MSU men's and women's basketball team and also the Warriors, which had a little NBA talk as well. Are the Warriors, the Golden State Warriors, the best team in basketball? Before we get to all of that, I want to invite Alex Sharg, the man behind the glass. How you doing, Alex? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Now that Monday Night Football is over, we can start previewing the next week for the Lions.
I'm telling you, how, you know what, talking about Monday Night Football, Aaron Rodgers is in a zone.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen a stretch from a quarterback, you know, I haven't seen this probably, you know, from the likes of, the only thing I can equate it to when I've been watching football is probably Tom Brady, when Tom Brady started to have his breakout years and really solidify himself as one of the best in the league. But Aaron Rodgers is playing out of his mind. If I had to give an MVP award right now for the NFL, I'm probably giving it to Aaron Rodgers. I don't know. I don't think there's anybody else that can compete with this man right now. No, he's in his zone.
How many games has he put up more than 40 points a game this year?
Yeah,
he's
crazy.
He's probably put up about 8 games worth of 40 points or more. The guy's on a roll. He might be breaking Peyton Manning. You know, Peyton Manning lost his streak over the weekend for consecutive touchdown passes in a game. I think he was at like 50 games. Rodgers might be coming close to that now, man. I mean, he is streaking. So,
yeah, yeah.
And as much as we hate to say it, I think it's going to come down to that last game at Lambeau, Al, for the Lions.
It is. That's what I'm saying. You know, that's another point I wanted to make, because there are really no days off for either one of these teams. I mean, the race that is the NFC North is really getting interesting and intriguing right now, because the Packers, I mean, my goodness, they've rattled off, what, 5 straight now? And then you got the Lions. I mean, they have no room for error. Every single week they got to bring it. And, you know, it's going to come down to that finale on December 28th, I think. Packers and Lions are going to be an interesting game that possibly could settle things. So, but yeah, Aaron Rodgers, oh my goodness, out of his mind right now. All right, Alex, well, I'll tell you what, you know, Michigan State, we had a lot of discussion on yesterday's Current Sports about everything that took place over the weekend as far as the final college football rankings were concerned. Ohio State sneaking into that number 4 spot and possibly playing for a national championship now. And, of course, all of the bowl revelations were also revealed. And Michigan State will be playing in the Cotton Bowl, of course, against Baylor. A golden opportunity to add to the Big Ten's validity, I guess, when it comes to upper echelon, quote-unquote, competition in college football. So that should be an interesting game. But since the college football season is winding down, we decided to start things off today with Top 5 Tuesday. And today's Top 5 Tuesday, we'll be taking a look at the season that is for the 2014 MSU football team and sort of pick out our highlights, our top 5 highlights of the year for MSU football. So let's start things off with Top 5 Tuesday. 5, 4, 3. Gotta love our top five Tuesday music, Alex. I tell you what, every time I hear this song, it reminds me like the Beatles or something like that. But it's not the Beatles. It's some like random group. I don't know who it is. Funny stuff, though. All right, let's start our Top 5 Tuesday, folks. Again, Top 5 Tuesday.
It's hype. It's a hype song.
It's a hype song, yeah. These are the top five things, the highlights. And again, Alex and our eyes list, our list always differentiate here, but this is the Top 5 Tuesday list of the top five highlights of the 2014 MSU football season. Alex, you want to start off, or should I do the honors?
I'll start off. Number five, it was big news nationally. You never saw a case like it. And basically, it was the, let's just put it this way. When do you see a mother holding their child back from picking a college? It's the Malik McDowell signing. For me, it's a highlight because it got a lot of national attention that maybe wasn't needed. I don't know if the team really wanted that publicity. But when was the last time, Al, you saw Mark D'Antonio hold a press conference to talk about one recruit?
Yeah.
And that, well, that for me, when you're talking about Michigan State football, in this area, you hadn't seen anything like it. And the hype that went in with this one recruit and all of the barriers that they had to enter for him were unbelievable.
That's pretty interesting because you actually are going what happened before the season started then with that situation. But, yeah, I mean,
I take it from, like, the year.
Yeah, from the year.
The whole year.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was an interesting situation. The Malik McDowell situation was certainly one that got a lot of play here on the air at Current Sports. A lot of callers waiting on it. It was one of those situations where – when it comes to recruiting, and this is, and you guys know, I hate, and I'd never use it. Hate is a strong word. Hate is a very strong word. I'm using it here because I hate recruiting, and this is one of the biggest reasons why I do. Sometimes, first off, you have kids that you don't know, and this doesn't apply to Malik McDowell's situation because Malik McDowell always wanted to come to MSU. That was his choice. He wanted to make that decision, but there was another added incentive that I'll get to in a second. But one of the reasons why I hate recruiting is because you never know sometimes with these young kids. They change their mind so much at the drop of a dime. You never know what they're thinking, and if they make a verbal commitment here, they could easily change their mind and go somewhere else. The other reason I hate it is because sometimes parents get way too involved in where their son or daughter should take their athletic talents and play their college ball at. This was one of those situations where Malik McDowell's mom did not have a good experience when she came up here and said, hey, I don't want you going to Michigan State. I'm not signing your papers. Point blank, period. Now, his dad supported Malik. His dad was actually present at the initial press conference when Malik, on signing day, said that he wanted to go to Michigan State. But mom was like, that's not happening. I don't want that to happen. And it's just one of those situations. Look, you just be happy that your son or daughter is going to college in the first place. If he wants to go to Michigan State, let him go to Michigan State. But that was a very interesting story and a very interesting number five for you, Alex, I must say. All right, number five. I got to pick on you, Alex, really quickly with this one because I guess you could say this happened before the season started as well. I still have a crackle from now and then, every now and then, just thinking about the situation where we were at a few of the practices before the season started, right? Now, folks, if you don't know how Michigan State football practice goes, and we shoot a lot of footage, you know, before the season starts for Current Sports TV to just show you how Michigan State is preparing and all that jazz. So Michigan State, first off, I want to shout out Michigan State's athletic department because they do a great job of giving us pretty good access when it comes to just any sport at Michigan State, especially when it comes to football. And they allow the TV outlets from around the area to shoot at least about 5-10 minutes of practice before the season starts, and even during the season sometimes, depending on the matchup. Now, this is before the season starts, and Alex is out there, you know, really nice day, the athletic department there and the SIDs there allow you to shoot certain things during practice. Sometimes you can shoot the offense, sometimes you can't. Sometimes they just allow you to shoot the defense or special teams. This is one of those segments during practice where you were not supposed to shoot anything offensively, no quarterbacks, none of that stuff. Alex didn't hear the bell being rung and didn't hear the announcement that was made over the PA system. And Alex, who were you shooting? Connor Cook, I think it was.
I was shooting the whole offense, man. I was shooting everything, everything and anything out there.
We probably have some secret play that MSU used multiple times throughout the year on camera.
I'm not going to say it over the air. I know the play. I remember the play. They actually used it a lot this year.
Yeah. Oh, did they? Okay. Well, Alex was, he was shooting. I guess you were shooting the play. And D'Antonio season. This is Mark D'Antonio. This is not one of the assistant coaches. This is Mark D'Antonio, head coach Mark D'Antonio. He sees it, and he gets all up in your grill. He first said, no cameras over here. And then he just gets, teed off to the nth degree and yells at you, no cameras over here. And then everybody turns their head and it's Alex. That was a hilarious moment, Alex. And now you look back, you got to chuckle at that one. That was pretty funny.
Oh, hey, if they don't say no, I'm going to keep shooting.
There
but
you
if
go.
They say no,
they did say no. You didn't hear it, though. Yeah, but right. Yeah, funny stuff, though. That's hilarious. And we actually played the bite of that on Current Sports, too. So I'm going to start with that. Just a real lighthearted moment.
I like that, man.
And let me go to number four now. I'll go to number four, and we'll get to your number
all
four.
Right.
For me, number four, I got to go with Stategate. And folks, of course, with the Michigan State and Michigan rivalry game that took place this year, right before that game, and a lot of us media members didn't realize, and of course you've heard this story before, we got a lot of press in play, but we didn't know until after the game that this happened, but Michigan, of course, driving the tent stake into the grass at Spartan Stadium is number four for me, because it was one of those moments that added a little drama to the matchup, really added a little drama to really a drama-less game. Michigan State has been just putting the business on the Wolverines in these past recent years here. And it's not even been close. It hasn't been a rivalry, to say the least. But anyway, this added a little fervor to the whole matchup. It got, many fans out there talking. It got many of you callers out there talking here on Current Sports. It got us media members buzzing. And it got D'Antonio, got under the skin of D'Antonio and his players alike. I mean, Connor Cook, talked about how, Connor Cook was really the guy that talked about the moment. We didn't know about it until Connor Cook had brought it up in the presser. And it was one of those rallying cries from Michigan State. Like, okay, they're going to come here and do that on our home turf. No, that's not going to happen. And added to some fuel to the fire, to the much needed fire that has really kind of dimmed down over the years in this rivalry. But I thought that was a very interesting moment. It got a lot of play. That's my number four, Stategate number four.
I like that. I have that a little bit lower on the list. But my number four is the emergence of Tony Lippitt throughout the year. Tony Lippitt, you remember him last year, criticized for dropping balls. He was kind of under the radar. And this year, he's even talked about getting drafted in some of the upper rounds. Has a really high ceiling. He's really coming to that main target. I've heard even some people compare him to the target when Charles Rogers was here. And Charles Rogers being that main target for the Spartans. And Tony kind of took that role this year. He was their go-to guy. And he really helped the offense emerge. And as much as that was one of the weaker points compared to the defense last year, when you're talking about points alone, that defense was top in the country last year, still is one of the top. But that offense, it was everyone under their first start. Connor Cook had his first start, and now him and Tony, they have such a good connection. It only grew with the Rose Bowl last year, and this year, it's even better.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, Connor Cook and Tony Lippitt have had a love connection this entire year. To see him emerge, and you talked about how earlier in his, when he came here in 2011 as a redshirt freshman, I mean, I tell you what, man, Tony, and that entire wide receiver core would get criticized so often about how many balls they were dropped, their lack of consistency from game to game to game. Tony Lippitt, I tell you what, just about everything that Connor Cook has thrown to him most of this year has been money. And, what's really impressive to me is how Tony is able not only to catch the football, but to gain yards after the catch. His yards after catch has been really, really something remarkable. He's not just a catch the ball, tackle, that's it, type of a guy. He's a guy that is very impressive and can make some things happen with his legs as well. And I thought it was really cool how, during the last home game, on senior day for Mark D'Antonio and his team, he decided to showcase just the kind of dual threat that Tony Lippitt could be at the next level possibly, and putting him at that cornerback position, a position that he also played as a redshirt freshman back in 2011. He's such a dual threat, athletic type of a guy that can be plugged in multiple areas. I do think Tony Lippitt will be one of those guys who may be taking, in maybe a late first round, mid to late first round, early second round type of a pick. And, it begs the question here, because Tony Lippitt and also Jeremy Langford, for me, that was my number two, Alex. But, it begs to me, and you talked about Connor Cook, and you talk about the next level with Tony Lippitt, where would he be drafted? I got to ask you, do you think Connor Cook should leave after this year?
Yeah, and if you look at the reports, he's saying that he'll take another year, he wants to take another year, but if the situation's right, he might reconsider that.
You got to, yeah.
I think that staying another year would help. I don't know if it would necessarily hurt him. I think it will only help if he stays another year. But let's face the reality. He can go if he wants to this year. He can be drafted, not maybe in the top 10, but he can be
a second round
maybe.
Yeah, I honestly think that one of the big things in this discussion when you look at it is that if Connor Cook's going to leave, because I do think that if Connor Cook, let's say Connor Cook does come back for another year. Let's say that his numbers go down. He can hurt himself if he doesn't play up to the expectation that he has these past two seasons.
True.
Right now, I think, you know, he was Rose Bowl MVP last year. He's had a great year this year. When you look at the now, his accuracy could have improved. That percentage is also a number I've been harping on for Connor to improve at game by game by game. But overall, Connor Cook has been relatively solid this entire season. What if he comes back next year and those numbers go down? That's going to hurt his draft stock. If he's going to strike, you got to strike when the iron is hot. The iron is pretty warm right now, Alex. If I'm Connor Cook, I may leave after this year. I don't know. I think I may leave.
But that's the thing, and that's what you say. I mean, if he's a first-round pick, yeah, I think he should go.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's second, third round, he knows he could be a little bit more accurate. Maybe you stay another year. You get a lot of the offense back. Yeah, you have some seniors leaving. You do. But you still have a lot of your playmakers back, and there's a good youth under there. That will really help him out too.
Yeah, and I think another thing that also adds to this discussion that has really nothing to do with Connor Cook, but just Michigan State quarterbacks in general. If you look at the success that Michigan State, and it's kind of ironic I'm bringing this up right now, even though Brian Hoyer just lost his job to Johnny Manziel. But if you look at the overall success, relative success that Michigan State quarterbacks have had as of recently in the NFL. Kirk Cousins had, you know, a brief stint with the Redskins where he looked solid before he lost his job again to RG3. Nick Foles, before he was injured for the Philadelphia Eagles, he was fantastic. Brian Hoyer has had some impressive wins in the NFL. And you started to hear throughout the chatter of the NFL from guys like, you know, Jaworski of ESPN, you know, to other analysts, national prominent analysts in the NFL, just talk about the efficiency that Michigan State quarterbacks come into the league with, and it's a hot discussion right now. Michigan State quarterbacks have produced in the NFL as of recently, and Connor Cook being one of those guys, when you look at his numbers in the Big Ten this year, they've been pretty solid. I mean, why not leave while that perception still exists for Michigan State quarterbacks? I think that'd be really interesting, too, if he even thinks about that when making his decision. But I think Connor Cook right now, let's say, and this is big for him as well, let's say he goes out and has an unbelievable game against Baylor. Oh, boy, you got to leave. You have to leave. If he goes out there and shows out against Baylor, I think he pretty much signed on that line right now. He's going to the NFL draft.
Yeah, no, that's actually a great aspect to think about too. I like that. And that was a good point. The Cook overall, the Cook Lippitt love connection, like you put it, is outstanding this year.
Certainly.
Should I give you my number three?
Yeah, real quick? Go ahead.
Number three. This actually happened in a game following their big loss to Ohio State. The R.J. Shelton kick return, man.
Mm-hmm.
For me, that was a highlight because it was something you never really saw from the special teams all year. Even last year, they had some punt returns that were pretty good. But never a kick return last year that went for a touchdown, I don't believe.
Yeah, we'll have to double check it, but I don't believe either.
I don't think so.
And that was the first one all year for the season with RJ's run back, yeah.
Exactly. So for me, that was a big thing. It was following a big loss, too, and that kind of kick-started this team for what they needed. Was it at Maryland? I think that's when they did it at Maryland.
That was against Maryland.
So they really needed that to kick-start, especially going away to a tough territory like that. Brand-new team. That was a big highlight for me.
Yeah, because I remember I was actually I was at my mom, because that was around a week, and I went back down to Detroit to see my mom, and I was watching the game on TV, and I go to take out my dog, and I come back in right at the start of the game. I'm like, oh, whoa, Michigan State scored already? I couldn't believe it. And that was, of course, the R.J. Shelton run back. But, yeah, that's a good one. Now, Alex, you know where I'm going now with number three. The student section discussion.
Oh, boy.
That was so prominent throughout this season was really just kind of ridiculous to me. It's one of those things that definitely has to be talked about because, you know, Mark Hollis sent out a few tweets and he talked about how, you know, we're going to look into other areas to see how we can combat students staying throughout an entire game and how it looks bad on national TV when the camera's panning around, you know, and you go to the student section and nobody's there. So I just thought it was very interesting. It was interesting because it opened up a dialogue that has previously existed, but not as prominent at Michigan State until really for me this year. It being on the primetime stage, you know, it really, you know, that Nebraska night game at Spartan Stadium is when it started. And I tell you what now, I think, Alex, we live in a world now where the world of television sports broadcasting is becoming so good. The at-home experience to watch a game is arguably better than the at-game experience in many regards, especially when you take into account weather, when you take into account comfortability that has to do with that weather. It just has a lot to do. And then the HD aspect of things, you can look at multiple replays. You can look at other games while you're at home watching that game. The at-home experience is becoming so good that individuals who are in charge of putting butts in the seats at athletic venues are panicking just a little bit, Alex, I think.
I don't know about that, man.
I think so.
When you're there, as much as, yeah, you get the sound, you get the fan experience from home, when you're there, there's nothing like being there, that like aurora of it.
Right. And right. I hear that.
There's still relevancy to that.
But do you think for the diehard sports fan, yeah, they love being there.
Right.
Without a doubt.
So, yeah, maybe that's just for us.
Right.
We like that.
Exactly.
We love that.
I mean, I love going to the games. I mean, it's nothing like that for me. Having that experience where you're there and you're watching it with your own eyes, first person point of view, I love that. But for the casual sports fan out there, I think, you know, who is just a casual fan of sports, they might not like, I mean, of course, they may like being at the game. But I tell you what, when the weather's not, I don't care what weather it is, Alex, I'm enjoying the game when I'm there. That you can't say that for every fan out there. Being at home, watching in HD, sitting back, you know, with your puppy or something like that and your favorite beverage, that somehow is trumping the in-game experience for a lot of people, and it's a legit discussion that needs to be had. But I just thought it was kind of taken out of context because the students got bashed all year.
They did.
And I kind of felt where they were coming from.
You interviewed Shalik about that.
Yeah, Shalik talked about it, and he had a call right on our WKAR cameras about, hey, guys, come out, stay the whole game, we need you, and so on and so forth. But it was just a hot-button discussion, which I really, in some regards, had to side with the fans about. So, but yeah, number three. That's my number three.
That's a good one. My number two, I mean, following when Le'Veon Bell left, you knew there was big shoes to fill. And number two is the consecutive 100-yard rushing game for Jeremy Langford.
Yeah.
He's been so undershadowed because of Melvin Gordon, because of Tevin Coleman in the Big Ten. Two great running backs, one Heisman candidate. But this guy, like you said, Al, he kind of gets dogged a little bit, especially when you're talking about Big Ten All-Americans and first-team All-Americans. This guy wasn't even probably brought up in conversation just because of how good the Big Ten running backs are. This guy could be a draft pick, definitely.
Yeah, he was certainly
not
underrated.
Not a first, second rounder, but definitely a good mid to maybe a later round draft pick.
I don't know. I would argue maybe he could be
a first rounder.
I think late first. It wouldn't be like early first round, but maybe late, you know, mid, early to mid second round pick maybe. I don't know. I think Jeremy Langford is going to have he's shown some intangibles to really make an easy transition to the next level. I mean, he has great power. He's got a great burst of speed on the edges. I love Jeremy Langford. I do think he's very underrated.
But overall, he just filled the gap, man. And people were wondering what would happen when Le'Veon left. The running game wouldn't be there. He answered the call.
Exactly. And Le'Veon has been up.
What's your number two?
That was my number two. Tony Lippin and Jeremy Langford were my number two.
Great.
So I kind of combined Tony and Jeremy for number two. And number one for me, Alex, I'll go straight to number one here, is just the opportunity. And I put opportunity as number one because now, you know, Michigan State, looking at this entire season for the Spartans, the only etches that they've had on their entire schedule have now been, and they can say this now, have been against two of the top four teams in the nation. Two teams that will be competing for a national championship. Those are the only two teams that Michigan State lost to this year. Not many teams can say that, folks. And the opportunity that now awaits Michigan State, the opportunity to play a Baylor team that is number five in the nation, a Baylor team whose fan base feels as though they were snubbed from being one of the four all year, really, you know, seeing as though how they felt as though they were disrespected all year by TCU, seeing as though they won that head-to-head matchup. Baylor has been one of the best college football teams all season. And for Michigan State to be matched up against Baylor out in Texas, Michigan State has a golden opportunity to solidify themselves as a powerhouse, as one of the powerhouses in college football. And now you talk about two top 10 finishes for Mark D'Antonio in his program. I tell you what, you know, in lieu of the two losses that they had this year, you have to tip your cap to what this team did this year. This is a golden opportunity for Michigan State, and I'm looking forward to this game, Alex. So for me, really, opportunity in the Cotton Bowl.
That's a good one. Number one for me, it was the State Gate. It was the actual thing of making a statement against Michigan. Yeah, the stake on the ground. But the press conference after and D'Antonio's comments after that, you had that flashback to 7 years ago, back into, you know, right when Mark D'Antonio took over, and he's saying, you know what, you know, it was in regard to Mike Hart's comments back, I think it was 07.
Yeah.
And Mike Hart made some comments.
He had a little brother comment, right.
And D'Antonio, you know, had some words to say about it. But he said, you know what, I'm going to be here for a long time. Pride comes before the fall. They had it coming. And then you fast forward to this year's game in the press conference, and he says, I think we had to put a stake in them at that point.
Yeah, I like that. Was, you know, a good line,
that,
wasn't
that,
it?
That really just made a statement from when he said those comments years back, and the overall just dominance of Michigan this year. For Michigan State fans, that has to be a top highlight.
But it's becoming so common, though. It's like, I really do hope, for the sake of this rivalry, for this in-state rivalry, which I think is so precious and so coveted, I really hope that Michigan bounces back on its feet. I really do. I hope they get an upper echelon coach. They get that program back where it needs to be.
They're still the winningest program. At the end of the day, they're still the winningest program.
Right. They are still the winningest program. And, you know, this is a program with so much storied history. I just want to see competitive games against these two. I really want that to come back. So, all right, folks. Well, that wraps up our Top 5 Tuesday. Again, the Top 5 highlights of the 2014 MSU football season. If you want to give your own highlight, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll invite Brooks Lambeer for the last time this year. How about that? He'll put a bow on the season that was for the MSU soccer team, men's soccer team, that is. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll be right back in a blink of an eye. Being considered one of the 8 best teams in the nation is certainly admirable. Doing it back-to-back years is just downright crazy. But Michigan State had a golden opportunity here at DeMartin Stadium to make their Final Four dreams come true, but fell just a bit short, losing 3-2 against Providence. And for head coach Damon Rensing, it can be pretty tough to sort of temper the emotions that his players are feeling right at this moment.
There's not a whole lot you can say that's going to make these kids walk out with smiles on their faces. And I think one of the, you know, beautiful things about sports is that you put a lot into it and you put a lot of emotion into it. And guys put a ton into this game and this season. And then when sometimes you see it all come together and it goes well, and it's no better feeling. And I think sometimes it doesn't. And when that feeling hits, there's nothing you can do to solve that.
Especially this year, it was a little different not being the underdog in every single game, but I think we still kind of played with that edge, that blue-collar mentality, and I think that kind of represents the university as a whole. I always thought we were going to get that third goal. You know, we kept creating chances, and it's just one of those days that the ball wasn't bouncing our way.
I thought we were going to get that goal eventually, and even another one at that. We just never really took our foot off the pedal.
Consistent success is a foundation that this team is certainly adopting, and it was fueled by a fan base that was great all year. In fact, Damon Rensing shared a moment with that very fan base after the game, walking to the student section and simply saying, thank you.
I don't know if we can send the boys over right now, but from all of us, we love you. Thank you so much for everything you did this year, right? Thank you.
I mean, this university put on a first-class NCAA quarterfinal in front of a couple thousand fans, and you know, we're very thankful that they were able to provide that that opportunity and that environment for our student athletes and the student athletes of Providence.
You see the alumni that come out every game, and they still support Michigan State soccer. And you kind of look back when the game's over, and I just thought about how is this going to feel when I get to come back, and how is it going to feel when I'm already a Michigan State alumni. So you kind of realize you love Michigan State, you love Michigan State athletics, and it's going to be some of the best relationships that you've built through the rest of your life.
Yeah, folks, again, that's my report from DeMarden Stadium after the Elite Eight loss to Providence, Michigan State falling in that match 3-2. I tell you what, you know, we now invite Brooks Lambier of Impact Sports. He's the MSU men's and women's soccer beat writer for Impact Sports, and Brooks was also in town for that game at DeMarden Stadium. Brooks, how you doing, my man?
Good, Al. How are you?
I'm doing very well. As you just heard in that report, I mean, it was certainly a somber mood, to say the least, after that matchup. Michigan State, they put up a fight, though. They had a one-goal lead earlier in that game. And from my perspective, and you can, if you disagree, please let me know, because I felt as though they kind of just got a little bit relaxed. And I don't want to use the word complacent, but they kind of just let their guard down a little bit, and Providence just kind of took advantage. What were your overall thoughts after that game?
Well, if you talk about the first goal, I think they pushed to – they want another one. They want to go for the kill shot, and that's not what this team is. This is a team that, you know, possesses the ball. They don't want to get in the up and down, back and forth game, which is what Providence is very good at. And I think, as you saw after the, you know, first goal of the back and forth, there were a couple times when Providence almost had the tying goal. They finally got it about 20, 30 minutes after the eighth minute, and you know, they got into a game early that they shouldn't have gotten into, and you know, they could have won this game, and they know that, and Coach Brunson knows that, but you know, this is what this team does. They fought back against Washington, they came back and won in penalty kicks. They fought all year. This is the team, no doubt, is what they say, no doubt, and they're fighters, and fighters fight, and you know, it's sad to see that they won't advance to the Final Four.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and looking at Providence, I mean, they were an 11 seed, I believe, in that tournament, facing number 3 Michigan State. I tell you what, looking at that 11 seed, I think that can be misconceiving when you look at Providence, because I felt as though, I mean, this team, that was a very talented team that Michigan State played over the weekend. Is Providence better than what we thought they were?
I don't think so. I think, like I said last week, the Big East is very good. Creighton was in the Elite Eight. Georgetown was the Elite Eight. Both teams lost. Providence is the only one to advance to the College Cup, and Providence won the Big East tournament. This Providence team is very good, and they knew, everyone know, the MSU squad knew what they were like and what could happen if they played into their game. So it was no surprise. Very good team. Have to play a very good UCLA team in the College Cup, which I don't think they'll be, because I think UCLA is a very good squad, one of the best in the nation, and probably the best remaining of the four teams. So good luck to them in their Final Four game, and you know, it's going to be a good College Cup.
Yeah, and that was my next question. I mean, looking now, Providence advancing now to play UCLA. What do you think is going to be the national championship when this whole thing is said and done?
Well, I picked UCLA to win the whole entire the tournament when
gotcha.
When I did my first podcast with J.R. Eskelson from Top Door Soccer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think they'll play, you know, that UMBC team has done very well. They've come out of nowhere, but their keepers made very good saves at times and kept them in games. They won in PKs last week against Creighton. Virginia finally getting past Notre Dame, beats a very good Georgetown team. That's a toss-up to me. I think either team could win, but I think it's UCLA that's going to take this. Leo Stoles is a very good player, 23-year-old. Played a little youth club, professional youth club in Germany. Very good player. They have another freshman who's very good, very fast. Didn't play much earlier in the season because of injury. I think it's really UCLA's to lose.
Brooks Lambier of Impact Sports. So now, Brooks, you know, after that game, what mood did you really sense? Because I tell you what, when looking at the players and talking to a few of them afterwards, I mean, it was one of more so, gosh, we really could have won this one. You know what I mean? Did you sense a mood of regret? Did they feel like they left everything out in the field? What did you sense after that game?
Mistakes was what, you know, they kind of felt. But they gave it their all. They didn't give up. There's nothing you could do about those, the first goal and the third goal. That it was just placed in the upper 90. I know, you know, if I talk to Zach Bennett, he'll tell me, yeah, I could have gotten to it. But that's just Zach, though. That, like, as a former keeper, that's just our motive is we need to stop everything. And there's shots sometimes where you're like, oh, I was a couple inches away. If I had moved back to second, or if I had been a little quicker to this, or my footwork was a little better, I could have gotten to it. But, you know, those balls are just placed in very good spots in the goal, in the upper 90, and you can't do anything about it. The second one they probably could have prevented a little from pushing forward too much at times.
Mm-hmm.
But they left everything on that field. And like I told Tim and Adam after the game, you know, after the press conference, I went up to them, I gave them a hug, both of them, and I told them, keep your heads up. Don't be disappointed in what you've accomplished, because what they've accomplished two straight years in the Elite Eight has been amazing.
Yeah, it certainly has. And, you know, when you talk about these deep runs in the tourney, especially these last 2 years, are these deep tourney runs something that fans and Michigan personnel alike can expect from this team as years go on now? I mean, how consistent, what is this team losing, and how good would they be the following year?
Well, we'll start with what they're losing. They're losing a very good senior class in Fatai Alashe, who will probably be MLS bound, I would think so. His name's popped up in a lot of articles I've read, and I'm talking to some MLS soccer reporters and top drawer soccer reporters that he will probably head to the MLS and probably at least get a chance to get drafted by a team. You lose Adam Montague and Tim Kreutz up top, very dangerous players, as we saw Tim's game tying goal against Washington, Adam Montague with the first goal against Providence, and you know, Adam scored goals in his career for this Michigan State team. Ryan Keener, great player, great heart. I call him a warrior because he is a warrior. Puts everything on the line. And, you know, you lose, Kyle. I'm not sure if Kyle Rutz is going to graduate. He may come back for a 6th year. Blake Scamara, who played early in his career. But you're losing a lot of good guys. And Ben Myers as well. He'll be back to finish school up next fall, but he won't have another year of eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
But leadership, you're losing all the leadership from these guys. And, you know, you could possibly be losing Jay Chapman, who's only a junior midfielder, but he's gotten a lot of looks. He's a homegrown player, played for Toronto FC in their youth system. He may go pro in MLS, and he's also gotten looks from English Premier League teams as Swansea City, Sunderland, and that's the big time. And Jay wants to go play professional soccer. I don't personally think he should. I think he should stay another year, because I think he needs to work on a few things. He's a very good player, one of the best in college soccer, but there's some things that he has some weaknesses still. And, a college education means a lot, and I think he should stay.
Right. So missing a lot of pieces, it seems like, going forward next year. I mean, how do you sort of combat experience with incoming youth, to be honest with you? I mean, because I think Damon Rensing, he's one of the best coaches I've ever been around. He has such a great mind for the game. First off, what makes him so special, and how do you combat that looking at next year?
I think what makes Damon special is he has this great bond with his players and the community. It's not about him. It's about the players and the community. And I think that's what makes a great coach is you're not worried about, you know, he's not worried about how many wins do I have as a coach? You worry about advancing to the Elite Eight, but it's not about him. It's about what he can do for these young men and for this community to help grow the sport of soccer, which he loves and the coaching staff loves, from Callie Stanner to Ben Pierman to Paul Gilbert. They all love the game of soccer. Damon's going to keep making this program a very good program. And why not? Because back-to-back Elite Eight titles, I don't know if they're scouting or they're recruiting right now, but they're probably out there on, because the boys' academy, U.S. Academy, is starting to pick up now.
Mm-hmm.
And, why not get some top recruits because of how good this team has? And, like, this goes back to the seniors and the kids before that have played before them. They've built a program that will make runs in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, before we get you out of here, Brooks, I really want to talk about, you know, as I mentioned in my story, the fan support that especially, you know, as the year has gone on for this MSU men's soccer team has really been remarkable. I mean, I looked up in the stands on Saturday, and it were completely filled. I mean, the student section is going crazy. And I tell you what, it was very entertaining. They had a lot of entertaining chants throughout the entire game as well. But it was really remarkable. And I thought it was really cool how Damon, you know, had that moment where he comes over and expresses his thanks and support. You know, the fan support for this team was something really to take note of. Can you talk about that a little bit? And are you starting to see people, how can MSU soccer, I guess you could say, my question here is, can MSU men's soccer, or soccer in general, be a thing here in East Lansing?
Yeah, I think it could definitely be a thing with Lansing United and at the great runs with MSU men's soccer. It could be a thing. And, you know, it starts with the students here, the Red Cedar Rowdies. Luke Ferris started the Red Cedar Rowdies, and he has a very close relationship with Coach Rensing. And Damon, you know, supports him. He wants students to come out to the game, which helps draw, you know, people in the community. You know, it's been tremendous what these students have brought with them to the games and the support they've given this soccer team, which fuels them on the field. And then, you know, from there, it just spreads out to people in the community, family members, faculty here at MSU, high school players, high school coaches, men's and women's included for that. You know, it's been great. And you know, with the success of the team. And also to mention as well, Jay Chapman is up for the Mack Herman Award, which is the Heisman Trophy of college soccer. He's a finalist for that.
Wow, so when is that being announced?
That the final voting is actually ends today.
Okay.
And I think gets announced, I think, at the end of the College Cup. So I think next week it does.
Gotcha.
Not
okay.
Quite sure.
And where they hold it, in like New York or somewhere like
no,
that?
No, it's not like the Heisman Trophy where it gets on New York. But
right.
They determine the winner, I think, for fan voting, and the committee chooses as well. But, you know, on top of that, with the great success of the players, you know, it's going to attract fans.
Right. That is very, very true. All right. Again, folks, Brooks Lambeer, MSU men's and women's soccer beat writer for Impact Sports. He also covers Lansing United. All right. Well, Brooks, I mean, you're kind of, well, we talked briefly before we took the air just now. I mean, you're kind of in off season, but really not. There are a few of the things to cover, but what will you be doing now, my man?
Well, I'll be following, see where these guys, if they head into the MLS. I know probably Fatai will go to the MLS Combine. Adam Montague is getting looks. I'm hoping both of them will go down, and we'll see what happens with Jay Chapman. But I'll be doing that. Obviously, signing day is huge for every sport, so I'll be interviewing the men's and women's soccer coaches about the signees the incoming freshmen will have for next year, and you know, just keeping with the MSU men's and women's soccer.
All right, we'll be looking forward to it. Brooks Lambeer, his final time this year that he'll be on with us. All right, again, he's with Impact Sports. All right, Brooks, hey, you take care. We'll be in touch, all right?
Thank you, Al.
All right, let's start our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show by talking about the Heisman Trophy. No, not in soccer, but in college football. The finalists were announced yesterday. We'll give you our thoughts on if we agree with them or not, all right? Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, folks, we have about 5 minutes left in the show. Just kind of as a brief tease for tomorrow's show, we're going to have an interesting debate and discussion here on Current Sports. As you know, each and every Wednesday, we dub the show as Barbershop Wednesday, where we embrace debate. And I don't know if you guys have been looking around and seeing what's been taking place from various athletes, pro athletes from around various different sports. You had Reggie Bush of the Detroit Lions, running back of the Detroit Lions. He was actually rocking an I Can't Breathe shirt. LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, they also had on the I Can't Breathe t-shirts as well right before their game against the Brooklyn Nets. And for those you don't know, I mean, the whole I Can't Breathe campaign, if you will, is one that, of course, is in support of the Eric Garner case. Eric Garner, a black man who was sadly killed during a scuffle with police officers, and his last words were, "I can't breathe." They had actually one of the officers had a kind of him in like the chokehold position, and the verdict was read, and none of the officers were being indicted on any accounts. So, and even before then, I mean, to add on to that, you know, to pile up on that, of course, you had the situation that took place with Officer Wilson as he was let go off of his charges. So it's been a really interesting past month and past few weeks. And athletes are taking notice. We played for you the comments that Charles Barkley had when it came to African-American, young African-American males in America and their relationship with police officers and law enforcement. LeBron James has come out and voiced his thoughts on the situation. It's really interesting, and it really now brings up discussion of athletes and activism. That's what's going to be entitled tomorrow, Athletes and Activism, the State of the Athlete and their role in changing political and social ties here in America. You do not want to miss that discussion. It's going to be a very, very interesting one, to say the least, and we encourage you all to weigh in on that one. It's going to be a very intriguing one, folks. I'm looking forward to that one. So, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of just, you know, taking, you know, head wave. I mean, in L.A., they had celebrities down in Hollywood, you know, protesting and walking around in support of Eric Garner on MSU's campus. Black Student Alliance, an organization here at Michigan State University, they held a protest. I don't know if you saw this, Alex, but it was actually covered in the state news as well, where students were actually laid out in the middle of the street. A few of my fraternity brothers were also involved in it. They were laid out in the middle of the street protesting what is taking place. Really interesting stuff. So tomorrow we'll be attacking it from the athlete perspective, athletes and activism, because there have been many athletes, not even just talking about these past few weeks, in the past. I mean, come on. One of the biggest names that come up for me is Muhammad Ali. His political stance and views is one that sort of sparked the whole notion that athletes could really make a change and stand up for something,
yeah,
they believe in.
I like that. Good topic.
Yeah, definitely, without a doubt. All right, to wrap up the show, Alex, really brief thoughts. 2 minutes left in the show. Heisman Trophy finalists, of course, they were announced yesterday. Oregon quarterback Marcus Mariota, Alabama receiver Amari Cooper, and record-breaking Wisconsin running back Melvin Gordon. They are set to make their trip to New York for the Heisman presentation after it was announced yesterday. Do you agree with those finalists?
I do agree, because you want to have one of each position. But Trevon Boykin from TCU, he's thrown for over 3,000 yards. He's broken records. He's put TCU on the map. It gets me upset, Al. I'm really upset that he didn't make it, man. I mean,
yeah,
he's the sole reason TCU has gone this far. And the fact, I think it really comes down to the fact that the Big Ten got its hoist. You know, Melvin Gordon, he got stopped in the last game. He couldn't do anything. You can throw him winning the Heisman out the window now.
Yeah.
For me, it's going to be Mariota or Cooper, whoever's going to basically win or do well in the 14 playoff. But it's before that, isn't it, the Heisman presentation?
It's this weekend, I believe.
It's this weekend.
Yeah, this Saturday,
so
I believe.
At the end of the day, it's going to be Cooper or Mariota. But I think Boykin, on paper and looking at the overall team picture, is most valuable to his team and had the best year.
So you think he should have been winner? He could compete with...
I don't know about winner, but he should have been at least in the finals.
He should have got a ticket to New York.
He should have gotten a ticket to New York.
Gotcha. Well, I do agree with the final three, and you definitely have a very compelling argument there. At the end of the day, I do think Marcus Mariota will win because he's been the most consistent. Again, Melvin Gordon only 79 yards against Ohio State. Interesting. We'll continue that discussion tomorrow as well. All right, folks. Well, we are out of time. I want to give a thanks to Brooks Lambeer of Impact Sports for joining me today. And for all of you who tuned in to today's Current Sports, you've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic Tuesday. And be easy, people.